Founder's Fate, and Startup Supercharge. So in today's talk, I'm going to talk about the future of AI and entrepreneurship, and some of the ideas I think all of you should be aware of and thinking of as we move forward. So the first one is human AI symbiosis. So we are entering an age right now where it is unavoidable to be working with AI. We all know this, right? Whether it's simply, you know, using ChatGPT or in a more in-depth way, which we are going to see moving forward. And what's interesting is that AI is the sum of all human creativity, at least AI as it is right now, right? I know Dean Ma is working on the next generation that is going to change everything. But right now, you know, large language models are really based on us. All the data and creativity we have created, we have fed into them, and they're feeding it back to us in a very useful form. And what we're seeing is that these large language models have many purposes that we didn't, even the computer scientists who invented them, didn't anticipate. And they are spanning, you know, the new buzzword in Silicon Valley is vertical AI. And does everybody here know what vertical AI is? Nobody raised their hand. Okay, so it's good I inform you about this. Vertical AI is where the money is going right now. And vertical AI means taking not just large language models like OpenAI has developed, but taking data from specific vertical industries, whatever those industries are, you know, a branch of medicine, a branch of manufacturing, new energy, taking data from those vertical industries and building large language models or smaller language models around those so that people can ask questions of that data. They can use that data to forecast things. They can use that data to search and find things within those industries. And so a lot of venture capital now is shifting in that direction because as we've seen, the big large language model companies out there, you know, OpenAI being the leader, they have already, they've been funded, right? And the cost to start a new one today, the price tag goes up every month, right? You know, Sam Altman is talking about raising $100 billion. So how can you compete with that if you're a new startup? Not that easily. So what we're going to be seeing in the future is that every job, all of your jobs as students, everything you do will be in some way tied into AI. And if you want to be relevant in the job market in the future, you should be the one figuring out how to use AI to change your job and make you, and if you have a company, your company more productive. Because you will be the ones they choose to hire, and other people who aren't using AI in their job on a daily basis won't be as marketable. It'll be harder to get a job. That's just how it is. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is that AI isn't a business model. And a lot of people get confused. I'm starting an AI company, you know, fund me, right? We have AI. AI isn't a business model, it's a technology. So AI itself, unless you are building core infrastructure for AI, you know, like a large language model company or core pieces of the infrastructure, then you need to think beyond the AI. It's not enough to just say you have AI. What matters is how you're going to use that AI. And in particular, as an entrepreneur, you need to think about how you use that AI to benefit your customer. So customers create demand, not AI. Like AI can make your product or service much better. It can give you a competitive edge, but it fundamentally won't create the demand for most things unless you're selling infrastructure, like I say. So if you're not selling AI infrastructure, you have to think, who is your customer? Always go back to your customer and then figure out, how can I add value to this customer with AI? That's a very important process because a lot of people go the other direction and they get stuck. There isn't really demand for what they have. They're just slapping AI on top as a buzzword to raise capital, and then their business doesn't go. The other thing you need to think about is that, especially with ChatGPT, Google Gemini, all these, you know, whether it's Facebook out there with Llama, whatever it is, whatever platform it is you are using, you have to understand if you're using their API, so can everybody else. Every other entrepreneur out there can access the same API. So does that AI give you any competitive advantage? No, because in 2 days, another entrepreneur out there can do exactly what you're doing if they're smart. They just access the API. So you have no competitive, just saying you have you're doing this business and you're using AI, but you're not using any original technology of your own. You don't have any proprietary data of your own. If you don't have those things, you're just like everybody else. And in entrepreneurship, I will tell you, if you don't have a moat around your business, if you don't have a reason that customers come to you and will stay with you, then you are not competitive. And you will probably not succeed, because you'll find very quickly, even if you're slightly ahead of everybody else in doing it, that copycats come in. And we all know, if there's a business and it's going to make some money, everybody floods in. So what you need to figure out are a couple things. Number one is, how do you build a moat? And one of the most effective moats out there right now is the network effect. So if you're a market leader and you enter the market first, and you can, the more customers you can bring in, the more partners you bring in, the more value you create for your customers, and you can grow that, the bigger you grow, the bigger your moat, the higher the walls around your business, the more successful and valuable your company will be. So if you don't have that network effect, what can you do? Well, then it comes down to these things. Proprietary data. Like, is there a data set that you own that your competitors can't, so that your output will actually be better than what your competitors can provide? That's very important. Do you have a unique business model? Have you thought about this? Is there some way that your business model can protect you from other players coming in and trying to steal your business? Do you have patented technology? Is there any technology you have? And it can't just be patented technology. Patents aren't valuable unless they produce a result for your customers. I know a lot of entrepreneurs who say, I have 10 patents. What do these patents do in your business, right? You can have 10 patents and they could be totally useless because they don't actually produce a result for your customer. And at an early stage, patents don't matter as much as at a later stage, because at an early stage, you don't even have time or money to defend your patents. That comes later. And then, of course, the last one, which I talked about, the network effect. And there are other ones. You can have exclusive relationships with different players in the industry that give you an advantage that other people can't get those relationships. Exclusive content, things like that. You know, you look at Netflix. Why did Netflix start creating its own content? Why? One, it lowered their cost. Number two, it was their exclusive content, right? Only Netflix had it, so you had to come to Netflix. You see this across every industry in different forms. So let's talk about emergent intelligence. This is an aspect of AI that a lot of people don't think about, but is a very interesting one. So I'm going to explain it in very simplistic terms. I could make it much more complex, but I'll try to do it in simplistic terms. You know, AI now has the basic ability to reason. And this is really important for you to understand, because our brains reason. This is how our human brains work. We generalize across different categories. So let me give you an example. You can have in a large language model training data that tells you that when it rains, more customers buy umbrellas. And then the large language model can actually, and they found this when given the right data, it can actually determine on its own that, oh, a raincoat does a similar function to an umbrella. So if people are buying more umbrellas when it rains, they should be buying more raincoats when it rains. Now, this, again, is a simple example. But if you extrapolate across huge, massive amounts of data, all of a sudden, large language models can come up with answers that you wouldn't expect it to know because it wasn't specifically trained on that. And that is a very powerful thing. And entrepreneurs right now are figuring out how to use this ability to provide value to their customers that we didn't even think was possible several years ago. Have you heard of Emma? Anybody heard of Emma? So Emma's a new startup in Silicon Valley. And that's why I'm here, to show you some of what's going on. Emma is what they call a universal AI employee. So it's powered by generative AI. And the idea here is that companies in the future will be having AI employees. And in the case of Emma, Emma really assists human beings. So it's not a totally independent employee, but that's how they're marketing it, right? They're marketing it as an independent employee. But really what it does is helps people in the company write proposals, talk to customers, analyze data, automate workflows, and a host of other functions. And more as these as AI advances, we're going to see these autonomous agents, really that's what they are, autonomous agents, as an essential part of the workforce. So you, many of you, or almost all of you in the future, will be collaborating with these autonomous agents and working with them and alongside them in your companies. So elderly care is a huge area for AI. We all know the populations in China are aging, South Korea, Europe, especially Japan. It's really, really, we are going to need AI in our healthcare system, especially there simply aren't enough young people in China or South Korea or Japan to take care of the elderly people, because we're getting this spike in elderly people. And, you know, the young people, there aren't enough. So what they're developing now are these little robots. And this is one use case I'm going to show you. And these cute little robots here, these will talk to an elderly person who is suffering from a degenerative disease, like Alzheimer's disease, or a stroke, a victim of a stroke. And they will talk and communicate. And what they found is that a robot, especially with generative AI, can actually help the stroke victim recover their ability to speak again much faster. Why? Because no human's going to sit there and talk to them all day. It's too expensive, too time-consuming, too frustrating, right? To talk to somebody who can't remember. But the robot will be very happy to perform that function. If you've had a relative with Alzheimer's disease, you know, after 15, 20 minutes talking to them, it gets exhausting because they start forgetting everything you just told them. So can you keep them happy? Yes, you can do that with AI. And who would say this is a very good use of AI? Well, most people, right, would think that. You know, the interesting thing is we're coming to a point now where we have to think very carefully what is good uses of AI and what aren't good uses of AI. Because there's a professor at MIT called Sherry Turkel, and she actually thinks this is immoral. This is immoral to have these robots talking to patients with Alzheimer's disease and strokes. Why does she think that? Well, her opinion is that we are tricking them. We are tricking them into thinking they're having some meaningful contact with some intelligent source, when really it's just an algorithm spitting out, you know, has no emotions, no feeling, doesn't care for that elderly person. So you have to ask yourself, is this good use of AI or bad use? My personal belief is if it makes a person with Alzheimer's disease feel better and function better, then I'm fine with it. But we will get into many more cases in the future where the lines are much blurrier. So another really interesting use of AI will be educating our children. So right now, most of you in the room, the young ones, you grew up with, you know, a phone or a tablet, you know, an iPad, playing games, doing, you know, simple things as a kid. And your parents, whenever they were busy, a lot of times they'd say, oh, here, play with this, right? Well, in the future, it's going to be very tempting for parents, and many of you, when you have kids, to say, play with this, and it will be an AI. And that AI will come to know your child very well. And in some cases, we could predict that AI will come to know your child better than you do, Because with a lot of parents, unfortunately, they'll be working and the AI will be spending more time with their kids than they are. What does that mean for the future, for our next generation? What do those algorithms, who decides what's in those algorithms, who become the primary companion of our children? So those algorithms and the data associated with them will literally be programming our children, right? Just like society does, won't be people directly, indirectly maybe through these algorithms. And these algorithms will be amazing, right? Because they will be embodied in robots that are in the house that the children play with, interact with. You won't be hiring somebody, a nanny to take care of your kids. You will have a robot nanny, but that nanny will have a personality. That nanny will be teaching your kids. That nanny will be looking out for you and informing the parent, you know, taking the kids to the park. This will become routine. So we need to think very carefully who decides and who controls what's in those algorithms and what effect they have on the next generation, positive or negative. It could be very positive or not so positive, depending on where we go with this technology. Also, you know, our children are going to be learning. So everything they learn and how they learn will be dictated by these algorithms. Who has heard of PIMIs? Anybody? Okay, so let me tell you about PIMIs. So PIMIs is a simple application. It was created by two developers in Poland, two developers who said, what if we used AI so that I could take a picture of somebody, a photo of anybody I meet, like I could take a picture of you right now, and all of a sudden it would send me back, based on the recognition of your face, all the information it can find about you. So where you go to school, where you work, maybe even where you live, your social media accounts, all this information I can get just by taking a photo of you. My question is, this is kind of cool, right? If I'm, you know, imagine this built into glasses, right? A little camera in my glasses. I'm at a conference. You know, I don't remember people because I meet so many people, but instantly, it could recognize the person and say, oh, this person is from Huawei. You met them back in so-and-so. Or it could jog my memory with different information based on their face. Very useful. Or I'm a journalist. And I'm trying to research a photo I got to figure out who's in this photo so I can write an article about it. Very useful. However, on the flip side of the coin, do you want somebody coming on the strange man coming on the street and snapping a picture of you and knowing a lot about you? Maybe where you go to school, where you live, where you work? No. So we're in this point where AI is becoming extremely powerful. People are experimenting around the world with how to use it. And as entrepreneurs, the reason I bring this up in all of these use cases is because I don't want to just teach you how to make money. I want to teach you how to think about the products you are making and try to understand them at a deep level so you can know if they're going to be used for good purposes or not so good purposes. And you think this out in advance before you just put them out there. Because as soon as you put them out there, you know people are going to be using it in all sorts of ways. And in this case, it could be quite dangerous for a stalker or other people to use. So how do we know? The developer, the entrepreneur, needs to think about how these are used and build in safeguards to them. And you are the next generation, so it's going to be incumbent upon you to really not just get your product to market quickly, but get your product to market in the right way so that it actually produces a net positive effect. Now, here's another amazing technology that's coming out. Vision is one of the companies that is doing this. There's Israeli companies. There's all sorts of companies working on this. And this is AI that you could install in a camera in a store. And when somebody walks into that store, it can literally look at pattern match about how they walk, how they move, how their eyes move. And it can predict with a high degree of accuracy whether they will steal something before they steal it. Sort of like Minority Report, right? But this technology is here today. I'm not making this up. This is here. We have the technology. It's only going to get better. And if you're a shop owner, you think fantastic. If I know before somebody steals something, I can watch them, make sure they don't steal it. I could escort them out of the store even before they steal it. So it empowers shop owners to keep people from stealing. However, we all know that no AI is perfect. They're never 100% accuracy. So let's say this is 99% accurate, which seems pretty good. What if you're the 1% where it makes a mistake because maybe you walk funny, right? Or your eyes dart around in a funny way. Maybe you're the 1%, and every time you walk into a store, all of a sudden, the shop owners are all over you, right? And they're, how would that be? That would completely ruin your life if this was installed, you know, in all these shopping malls and everywhere else you go. It would make your life miserable, right? Everybody thinks you steal something even when you have no intention of doing so. So we know this technology is rolling out now. As an entrepreneur, you have to think about this. What does it mean? How will people use it? And how should we, most importantly, how should we use this technology? What is the right way? And we need innovation, not just on the core use case, right, for the customer, but the overall use case for society. And one more thing I wanted to mention here, it might not be shoplifting, right? These algorithms could just as well, and they will be used, to identify, let's say, which customers will buy more product. So you're working in a high-end store, right? Maybe they're selling designer watches or something, and you literally want your limited number of salespeople to be able to focus on the customers who will actually make a purchase. So with pattern matching, clothes, face, movements, everything about the person, over time, you'll be able to predict this customer will likely buy that $10,000 watch, give him the best service. This customer won't, ignore that customer. Now, is that fair? Is that the type of society we want to live in? You know, it may get, you know, it may make mistakes. It would make the shop more profitable because their resources would be allocated to the customers who are most likely to buy. And the shop, honestly, the shop won't care that some people get ignored, but the people would care. The individuals would care and society should care. So as we move into using AI in these ways, very important to think about. AI in the law. So this is another area where entrepreneurs and companies are innovating. So in America, we have a really interesting use case for this. So they're using AI now in the prison system. They have what are called parole boards. And I don't know the system in Hong Kong, but I will tell you, in America, we have a board of people, and they decide whether when a prisoner is eligible to get out of prison early, before their entire sentence is served, they can be let out on parole, but only if this board of people, humans, approves. Well, now these humans are actually consulting AI. So the AI will look at all the prisoner data, everything about the prisoner, and the AI will determine, is this prisoner likely to commit another crime? Are they likely to commit another crime in the future? And then it will make a recommendation to the parole board. And what we're finding is that more often than not, the people don't know, right? It's very hard to tell if a prisoner has been truly reformed or if they're just faking it, right? To get out of prison, they're on good behavior, saying all the right things. How do you know? People don't know. So they're going to look at the AI and they're going to ask the AI. And some people in the US are in prison indefinitely. Like literally, you may never be let out of parole. You may have to stay in prison the rest of your life if the parole board says no. So this AI has the power to keep somebody in prison for the rest of their life or let them go. And again, AI is never going to be perfect. And we have found biases. There are lots of biases in data based on skin color, based on background, based on education, which come into play statistically, which could say this person will not be a good candidate to be let out on parole, but they are also not just because they tend to be skewed, they're biased towards certain races, white versus black, you know, people in different geographic regions. All this data has biases built into it because our society has biases built into it. So how do we use this technology? It's being used now, but how do we use it in the right way? So somebody who may have totally been reformed and may never commit another crime again, the AI may keep them locked up for the rest of their life. Is that better than a human or not better than a human? If it's more accurate, if, you know, what do we do? I don't have any simple answers for this. I have no, you know, if it's a murderer and you tell me, and the AI can be more accurate than humans, I would want to trust the AI because I don't want that murderer getting out and committing another murder. So maybe the AI is better, but maybe it's not. Just think about that. Okay, so you may be going to a job interview soon. So some of you are graduating. That's conducted by AI. So this is Gecko, one of many companies out there now that's literally doing AI job interviews. It's interviewing employees and it's looking at their expressions, their sentiment in their voice, keywords that they say, and it is saying thumbs up or thumbs down. And a lot of companies are going to be using this, and they can use it right now, to screen employees, right? So you get a resume, and first of all, AI is already looking at your resume, right? So you're being screened out by AI right now, almost certainly. But then the next step is you won't even get to talk to a human. You're going to get on your little, you know, webcam, and you're going to be talking to an AI. It's going to be asking you questions, and it's going to be screening you out. Is this good technology? Well, as an entrepreneur or anybody in business who's hiring somebody as a hiring manager, it's great. I tell you, when I ran my own startups, and I ran three of them in Silicon Valley, when I did it, I never had enough time. And, you know, you get all these resumes and you get all these, you know, and you're like, I don't even have time to read the resumes. I don't even have time to meet all these people. If I can use AI to save my time, absolutely, I'm going to use this. Let's say you're the job. Let's say you're the employee, though, and let's say you're looking for a job. You're looking for a job, and for some reason, the AI doesn't like you. You don't know why. It's a black box. You have no idea why the. But you're never getting past the AI, right? Maybe you could tweak your resume and get it to get past the AI, but you can't tweak yourself that easily, right? Your personality, your face, all these things, how you talk, your sentiment. So. Is the AI going to keep you from never getting a job again if it doesn't like you? Like, it doesn't like you and everybody's using this algorithm. You may never get a job. I don't mean to scare you. But what I do mean is that you're the future, right? These technologies are going to be in your hands. You're going to be developing, deploying, using these technologies. We as society have to think about this. And you have to think about this. You know, there's not enough debate going on right now about how we use AI. Everybody's in such a rush to make money, to get, you know, to grow, to get faster, that we aren't really debating what safeguards we need to put in. So as I say, this technology is super useful. I would use it in a second because I'm a busy person. You know, I have to hire people for my company, Founderspace. I'm gonna be using this. Sorry, but it's so useful. But we also have to think about the broader issues and what it means. What? Oh, yes. You may never get into college, or your children may not, because the AI says, no, they're not good. You know, we'll be, yeah, right. Every aspect of life, getting loans at banks, everything, you know, all of this. AI is going to be used everywhere. It's going to permeate every aspect of society, and we need to think about these issues. Sora, you all know Sora, and Runway, Pika are other ones. The reason I bring Sora up not is one, it's really cool. It's pretty amazing if you've seen the videos coming out. The amazing thing about Sora is, you know, it can create a fully edited video, not just a clip, it actually different camera angles, everything else. So it's not, and these are 1 minute clips simply because it requires so much compute power and everything else to do this. But there's going to be a time when we can do a feature film, literally by interacting with it, by talking to the movie. So every person in here could be an amazing director. You know, take whatever's in your head and start talking, and you can create movies. It means that in the future, movies don't need to be made by big studios for hundreds of millions of dollars. You could create your own blockbuster in your home. in your bedroom, you could be creating a blockbuster film that can rival Hollywood. Very, very cool. Sora also is a lesson for us. And it's a lesson for all of you who are going to be AI entrepreneurs, right? So you look at Sora by OpenAI, and then you look at Runway and Pika by startups. Now, Runway and Pika, they got a lot of venture capital. Their products are pretty amazing. But now they're competing against the big guys, right, with even more capital. And the way LLMs work today is money makes the biggest difference, right? The more compute power you can throw at these, the better the results are. So it's very hard for startups to compete when they're directly in the line of the big players, whether it's Google, Microsoft, OpenAI, Facebook. If you're in their path, their development path, you're probably going to get crushed, honestly, because you're not going to be able to raise as much capital. And at the end, capital is going to determine the end result. So you need to think very carefully, even if like these guys were way ahead, they were very innovative, Runway and Pika, but I'm worried now they might not exist a couple years from now. They just might not be viable. Same with these other, you know, there's all these image ones out there creating different images. Literally, Midjourney, which we've all used. I think everybody here has used Midjourney. It's astounding. They've done a fantastic job. Looked like a great business. But now you go to Microsoft and they're giving it away for free. You go to Google, you can generate images for free. Well, who's going to pay Midjourney, right? And the quality of Microsoft and Google has caught up and soon it will surpass Midjourney. Who's going to pay? Who's going to pay for Runway or Pika? You know, the big guys can afford to give it away. They can afford to give it away because it's a winner-take-all game and they have the capital. So the little guys can't afford to give it away for too long. They're just going to run out of money. And this is what you have to think about when you're developing your product. You have to think ahead. You have to think, you know, five steps ahead. Am I in their development path? If you're in their development path, you better change your direction because you're not going to be viable. You better figure out another way. So my prediction is Runway and Pika, if they're going to survive, they're going to have to what we call pivot into another market, maybe a more specialized market where they can win. Okay, this is another cool application out there. It's called Blockade Labs. Does anybody know about it? So most people haven't heard of it, but really cool. So this, you can type in text and it will literally create a virtual world for you. Type in text, you can go do it. I did it. Type in text and it creates this beautiful virtual world. You can even, and this is a part I love, you can even sketch now. You can draw something and it will create a virtual world based on your drawing. And they're building in ways now where you can upload this to engines like the Unreal Engine and other game engines. So you can actually take your virtual world with generative virtual world, right? Generative metaverse, and actually upload it into a game or another environment and use it. So Google's Genie came out recently. And this is a great example of, you know, how Google's innovating. And what Google did, which I think is very exciting, is they trained their AI not based on human data directly, you know, data from making games. They actually trained it simply by watching 30,000 hours of video games. 30,000 hours. So they had their AI, they trained their model 30,000 hours. And then you know what? After they trained it, it can literally, you can do a hand-drawn sketch like you have here of a soccer ball and a goal. And what it will do is it'll actually create a game just from your sketch. It will understand, oh, there's a game I can create. Or you could take a real-world photo of a soccer field and a goal, and it will, again, recognize it and create a game. Or you can go and do a text-to-image, you know, on Midjourney or anywhere else, upload that text-to-image, and it will create a game. So where are we headed with this? So why did Google develop this? Did they develop it to create games? No. In Google's mind, they are building a foundational agent model, and they are experimenting with how to do this through games. So this is the first step in something much broader where we can literally feed the AI, simple things, like a simple slice of a game, which is what one picture is, like a frame of a game, and it can extrapolate from that and create the entire game mechanics because it's watched so many hours of games. But you could do that for anything. You could do that for tasks. Like in, if you want a robot to do a task, you could just show it a picture or tell it a few words, and the robot will then understand the whole task. You don't have to explain every step of the task. You just have to give it a small slice. That's where this is headed. Next frontier, AI and biofeedback. So I predict we have a lot of data about our bodies. And this data, we're not really using. How will we use this data about our bodies in AI? And there's many different ways. Medical, of course, but I'm going to show you some fun ones in entertainment. So there is a company called Red Meat Games, and they did something very simple. They were creating one of these horror games, you know, these scary games, zombies and all that stuff. And they took feedback from your iWatch, literally your iWatch. They could take your pulse rate. And what they did was when your pulse rate was relaxed, when you were very calm, they would amp it up and make the game scarier because you're supposed to be scared. But when your pulse rate shot up too high, they would actually make the game less scary. Very simple example. But you can imagine applications, games and entertainment, movies, where we can now change the outcome of the game, the movie, or what you're doing based on biofeedback. It could be your pulse rate. It could be other feedback. It could be your brainwaves from EEG, measuring your brainwaves, things like that. We can actually take that back into the content and change the content. Another interesting development is they now have AI that can analyze your personality and intention simply through your eye movements. So they can tell whether you're a neurotic type of personality, whether you're very calm, relaxed type. They can tell different intentions you have simply by how your eyes move. Now, most of us, like when we look at other people, we can read this. Like our brains, like even if not on a conscious level, but on a subconscious level. When you talk to somebody, you get a feeling about them. Are their intentions kind? Are their intentions nice? Are their intentions malicious towards us? We're very good because our survival depended on us reading faces. Well, now AI, through various means, can actually look at eye movements, micro expressions on the face, tone of the voice, and actually start to know a lot about people. And this technology is going to be going out there into IoT devices, into robots, because our robots and our devices will want to know people, want to know who they are, what they're about to do, how to interact with them in the best way possible. So we are seeing now this whole next phase of development where AI will be coming to know us much better than we can even know each other. Like we're pretty good at reading other people's body language and faces and stuff like that, but the AI is going to be much, much more accurate over time. So let's take that back into entertainment, right? If the AI is watching you through the webcam, if the AI is getting other biofeedback from your body, how will this change entertainment? And my prediction is our future entertainment, our games and movies, will come to know you personally. They will know you at a very deep level, and they will be watching you, and the game and the content will be changing in real time based on your interaction with it. It won't be a one-to-many experience. Right now, every game you play is a one-to-many experience, pre-programmed. Every movie you watch on Netflix or other sources, one-to-many. It will become a one-to-one personal experience where the content will be adapted not just to past data on like what you've watched before, but literally change, because in the future, we will be able to create movies in real time. We're seeing that with, you know, with Sora and Pika and Runway, and games too. We'll be able to generate the content in real time with generative AI and adapt it to who you are and what creating an experience for you that is the ideal and optimal experience, so you get the most out of it. So there'll be a time when you say, did you watch this movie? And everybody, yeah. What was the movie like for you? Because it was, yeah, the movie, when you watch a movie, let's say Oppenheimer, right? If you've all seen Oppenheimer, your Oppenheimer may be very different than somebody else's Oppenheimer. Oh, did you love that romantic scene in Oppenheimer where they did this and that? Oh, I didn't see that version, right? That wasn't in mine. But, you know, so everybody's version of every game and movie will be very, very different. So I like to say this is the year of the humanoid robot. So we are entering a new phase of robotics. Right now, Elon Musk and everybody else is on this bandwagon. And we are seeing development in robots that is literally, we are at the point where we've hit the AI for the brains of the robot has progressed to a certain point, and the mechanics, which is really, really hard, has progressed enough so that we can build multi-purpose robots. You know, before, robots usually did one thing well. They were a great vacuum, a robo-vacuum, or they are a great putter of parts in a factory, assembling parts. However, the future will be robots that learn. And I know Dean Ma here and the faculty here are actually working on cutting-edge technology that will take it to a whole new level. So we're going to see robots that truly learn based on a feedback loop with the environment, not necessarily based on massive amounts of data that we generate, but based on real-time interaction. And one company I'm working with is Fastra. They're out of Guangzhou, and I'm going to be bringing them into Silicon Valley. And they are building all the hardware, kind of using the whole supply chain in China to do that at a very affordable way, competitive way. And then we're going to couple that with leading-edge software to actually put that into the marketplace. Now, the robots are, what we're looking at now in terms of robots will not be where robots are headed. So where we're headed in the future are robots that are more lifelike. And this is Hiroshi Ishiguro. He develops lifelike robots out of Japan. And could you tell which is the real Hiroshi Ishiguro? And which is the robot? You can't tell? Yeah. So what? Yeah, this is the robot on the left. That is the robot. However, this picture is several years old. In the future, in a very short amount of time, you won't be able to tell. In a very short amount of time, I'm talking within 5 years, maybe less, a robot could walk in this room and you might not realize it's a robot. Just think it's another student or another professor. You won't know. So these will be expensive at first, but the way we're going, the amount of money being put into this mass production, the cost is going to drop dramatically. So these robots are going to come down and down and down. We're going to start to see them around us. What does this mean for our future? Like when we are living and working beside these robots, who, like you're developing, will literally be able to learn like humans, like learn from their environment, learn from, we don't have to pre-program them. Going to be a very interesting world that we live in. So I predict we will have robot companions. We'll have robot companions at work that work alongside us. We'll have robot companions that serve us at restaurants, you know, and do all sorts of functions for us. Take care of our kids, like we talked about. And we will have robot companions that we have personal relationships with, that we really come to depend on, that we may even fall in love with. And many of you say, do any of you think you're going to fall in love with a robot in the future? Anybody? Does one person? Well, I predict actually a number of you will fall in love with a robot. If you live long enough. So, and the young people, you definitely will live long enough. So, and it won't be that far in the future. Right now, there are applications out there that you can download. Have any of you heard of Replicant? So Replicant is an AI application where you interact with an AI. And I tried it. It morphed into an AI dating application, right? So it's this AI companion that you flirt with and date and tries to get you to pay money and all sorts of stuff. But when I tried it out, I was curious. So I tried it. I tried to date it. I asked all sorts of things. And you know what I found? I found it wasn't that good. Very crude. Like my engineering brain literally looked at it and go, you know, I could fool. It didn't seem realistic at all to me. However, This replicant has become extremely popular. Millions and millions of users interacting with it day after day. And they have other ones out there, character AI. There's literally hundreds of these out there now. And you interact with them. And in the case of replicant, what happened was people became very emotionally attached. Not everybody, but enough people became so emotionally attached, they're doing this every day. And they feel like they are forming what to them is a real relationship with this AI. And because of some business reasons and regulation reasons, the company, Replicant, had to change their algorithm at a certain point. They had to redo their algorithm. And do you know what happened? The personality of the robot changed. They literally, I think they were forced to switch. OpenAI said no, had a policy against it, so they switch off of that. And all of a sudden, there was a huge uproar. Reddit, the community site, thousands of posts on Reddit of people. And you know what they were saying? They were literally so emotional. They were like, "You killed my girlfriend. You killed her." And they were mad. Like, "You killed, I had this relationship. We cared about each other. We had this history. You killed my girlfriend." And this is an app that I found completely unconvincing. So you can imagine 5 years from now, the AI that they're going to have will be so much better because it'll be able to remember your shared history. It'll be able to adapt itself to you personally. It could have personality traits just like a person. You could have real conversations much more in depth than they have today. We are programmed, I hate to say it, to respond to that. And there are many lonely people out there, right? And these people need an outlet. So when I ask you if a primitive, crude AI companion app can have thousands and thousands of people really almost falling in love with it, imagine a much more sophisticated AI, and then you imagine that AI embodied in a robot. So this is the future we're entering. My question, many of you might be working on these products in the future. So is this good for society? Is it good or is it bad? Well, you can imagine, I think the Chinese government will ban these. Mainland China, well, they control games. It's not hard to imagine. They don't want people talking to, but in the rest of the world, these are going to be out there. And we have to really think deeply, you know, what rights do we have as a human? And what responsibilities do the companies have making these? Because if you can make somebody really care for an AI, actually have an emotional connection to the AI, you have a great deal of power over that individual. You have a great deal of power to manipulate that person. You can manipulate for financial reasons to get them to buy things, right? The AI says, buy me this, buy me that. If you really love me, you're going to spend this money, you know? And if you care, or I'm going to shut down, I'm not going to talk to you. Just like maybe your boyfriend or girlfriend, right? They may say the same thing and you're like, oh, take them out to dinner, buy them stuff, right? But you'll be doing this with AI. So these are real. This is not hypothetical. This is coming. It's actually on our doorstep. So I want you to think about this because these applications are going to be everywhere, more and more human-like, us interacting with them. They're going to be our psychologists, our therapists, our, you know, virtual girlfriends, virtual boyfriends, our virtual spouses, potentially. How will this transform society? What does this mean? And where should we go? Will AI become conscious? I'm wrapping it up now with the big question. You know, people, even, you know, an engineer at Google got tricked into believing that Google's AI was conscious. We know, and every computer scientist here knows, they are not conscious. They're like the farthest thing from conscious. They have an AI literally is a prediction engine of the next most logical word or to put in after the previous words came. That's all it does. It's a simple prediction engine based on statistics with some randomness thrown in, so it doesn't give the same answer every time. That's what it is. But so it's just a mathematical algorithm. It's all math. So the AI today, the large language models we have today, are not conscious. I can tell you with absolute certainty. The real question is, as we advance, as new algorithms come out, as new ways of developing AIs come out, as the AIs literally get exponentially more powerful, you know, Sam Altman raising $100 billion and wanting $7 trillion for, he doesn't think small. But where are we headed with this technology? What does it mean for us? It's a really profound question. The wheelie thing is nobody yet, the greatest philosophers, the greatest scientists, we don't even understand our own consciousness. We literally don't know if we are fully conscious in the way we believe we are. There's a lot of evidence to actually say that a lot of what we do is mechanical, happens in our subconscious and percolates up to our consciousness, and our consciousness actually analyzes our decisions after we make them and then helps us make a better decision next time. So if you want to read, there's great books out there about neuroscience and consciousness. I've read a lot of them. And we don't even know if we are truly conscious in the way we believe we are. And we're almost certainly not conscious in the way we think we are. So that begs the question, you know, can machines become conscious? Well, what I can tell you with absolute certainty, is that in the future, they will be indistinguishable from our consciousness. There will be AI out there that literally, you know, right now, AI can pass some versions of the Turing test, which is to show, you know, whether you can tell it's a machine or a human being. But AI in general situation cannot pass the Turing test. Depends on what version, how you define the Turing test. But in the future, the AI will literally, you will never know it's an AI. It will be able to mimic or simulate everything a human does, right down to our mistakes. Like if it's really going to be human, it has to forget things or pretend to forget them, right? It has to make stupid mistakes and do stupid things, or you would know it's an AI. So we will have AIs out there in the future that literally we won't be able to tell. So we will, for all intents and purposes, be treating them as if they're a conscious being. And that's why I believe most people in the future will be able to fall in love with an AI, because they will be indistinguishable from our consciousness. We will believe them. That said, will they have emotions? That's entirely different. They are not biological beings. There is no indication that their consciousness will be equivalent to ours. And we will never be able to know, because we will never be an AI. They will never be us. So what is an emotion? I mean, I can't even know if my happiness is the same as any of your happiness, right? If you act happy, I think you're happy like me. If an AI acts happy, we're going to assume it's happy like us, whether it's really feeling what we feel or not. You know, each of us, we live in our own little bubble, right? Our own bubble of emotion. And we interpret other people's emotions in terms of our own emotion. That will be our relationship to AI and robots in the future. So think about that. Okay, my final question to all of you is, what is your future in a world of AI? This is what I wanted to get you to think about. As entrepreneurs, as human beings, as citizens of the world, what is your future in the world I have shown you? I'm Captain Hoff, CEO of Founderspace, the leading global startup accelerator. I'm also author of the award-winning books, Make Elephants Fly, Surviving a Startup, and The Five Forces.